everybody, and welcome to the very first Lupus LA, Your Story, Our Fight podcast. We are planning on bringing you many podcasts in the future, but we're going to focus on lupus stories and lupus patients and their families and how they inspire other lupus patients and their families to cope, to live, to survive, to thrive living with lupus. And I'm Adam Selkowitz. I'm the chairman of Lupus LA, and I'll be the host of the Your Story, Our Fight podcast. So welcome aboard, and we hope to have some really interesting and inspiring and exciting stories to tell along the way. My first guest on the podcast is a truly inspiring woman. Juana Mata is a lupus patient and a rheumatoid arthritis patient, but she's also a lupus advocate. And when we're going to hear all about her advocacy, but primarily she and her sisters run a group called Looms for Lupus. And they have been an integral part of the Lupus LA support group system. And I think Juana is a terrific example of how one can not only live with lupus, but really make lemonade out of lemons, I guess is one way to put it. So Juana, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you and talk about my experience.
Excellent. Well, so tell me, give me sort of your basic, how'd you get diagnosed? What happened? What led to your lupus diagnosis?
Well, I started having symptoms in 2008, but in 2009, I was diagnosed, at the beginning of the year, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. Of course, that was very difficult for me to know that I had arthritis, not knowing that there was more coming. And in May of 2009, I was diagnosed with lupus. A lot of problems with not only with the fatigue, the body aches, headaches, losing my hair, butterfly rash. But the day I went, I had blisters that were really, really bad on my nose, inside my nose, inside my mouth, and some on my body and on my scalp. So I went to the doctor, and when I was there, I went to urgent care and I told them that I knew something was wrong with me, that I needed to be checked. So I didn't really know what was going on. I just knew something was wrong. So I called my sister Estella, and Estella did go to the doctor. And when she got there, there was a shift in doctors. So the ER doctor, there was a new doctor, and Estella asked the doctor what was wrong with me. And he said, well, I don't have good news. And Estella asked him, does she have lupus? He looked at her and said, well, are you a doctor? How would you know about lupus? And she said, no, but I researched, does she have lupus? And he said, yes, in fact, she does have lupus. And at that moment, other doctors were saying that I was going to get a transfusion. And what this new doctor said, that because I had lupus, that the transfusion wasn't going to work for me. So they started giving me other medications. I was in ICU for 7 days. And when I went home with my platelets being at 80. But that's where
my story started. So, interestingly, when you look back, I know a lot of lupus patients, when they get diagnosed, they say, oh, I've been having all sorts of odd symptoms over the course of the last 3, 4, 7 years. Mm-hmm. Do you look back and say there were earlier symptoms that I didn't realize all sort of would result in lupus?
Now that I've learned a little more about lupus, I think back, and one of the things that I recall having all the time was the headaches and fatigue. Other than that, I had pains, body aches, but I mean, I didn't know that maybe I was exercising too much, or, I mean, I always had an excuse as to why I had the body aches. And I think that one of the main things was just the headaches, the mouth sores, the heads. I had like a rash on my scalp. And I think that's what it mainly was for me.
So since you were diagnosed and found the right medical team, how long did it take for you to kind of normalize, I guess, if there's, I know there's so many times you're in a flare and you're up and down, but you know, how long did it take you to feel that you were in somewhat more control?
Well, it took a couple of years because I did go through different treatments, chemo with a hematologist, because they weren't able to control the platelet count. There was 1 month where my platelets were normal to me, to the doctor, for me at 80. And he said that as long as we can keep them at one steady number, then I would be okay. But they weren't. So I had to be in ICU at least four times. And because the platelets would drop just, I mean, down to eight or lower than that. And so they had my hematologist had already scheduled a splenectomy, because he said that he tried all the medications and he wasn't able to control it. And I honestly don't know what happened, that 2 months before scheduling the appointment for the splenectomy, my platelets stayed at one number where they wouldn't be dropping. And but I want to say that it probably took for my lupus to be controlled about 4 years. I mean, here and there I have flare-ups, but nothing like the beginning.
And so when did you and your sister, and if anybody knows the Mata sisters, they mm-hmm. are a force to be reckoned with for sure. Mm-hmm. Tell me what made you say, I want to be an advocate, not just a patient. I know your career is helping others, and you work for Child and Family Services. And so I'm sure that's just part of your nature. But what was it that said, no, I'm gonna focus not just on my health, but other people?
Right. So the day I was diagnosed, I had no clue what lupus was. I was nervous as to where I was or how my health was, because I knew nothing about lupus. After being in the hospital 7 days and being released, and I started reading more about what lupus was, and there was very little information back in 2009. There wasn't, not like now. I mean, there's a lot more places where you can go and search, but for me, it was very difficult. And now with my mother, who doesn't speak English, it was very difficult for her as well. They were afraid that I was gonna die. So they were just searching for answers. And so every weekend, well, we're always together, but every weekend we were together for most of the day. And so we saw how just having the support with one another was helping not only me, but my family, my mom, my sisters, just learning together. And after knowing that there was very little information, we thought and we saw the need for our community to have more knowledge, to learn, and for us to be the ones to start not only advocating, but bringing awareness and bringing resources to the families who didn't have the access.
Lupus LA is proud to provide one-on-one support to the patient community. We offer support well beyond the boundaries of Greater Los Angeles. For more information, visit lupusla.org.
So why Looms for Lupus? Because I always found that to be sort of a very unique part of what you guys bring to the table in the lupus world.
Right. So when I was diagnosed, and after the first 7 days that I was in ICU, it was stressful. I mean, I still continue to work, yet when I would come home, my mind was just wandering and thinking, am I going to die tomorrow or how long do I have? So one of the things that I started doing is loom knitting. And loom knitting it's a looming kit where you do scarves or beanies. So I started doing that, and I found that helpful for me because I wasn't concentrating or I wasn't thinking about everything that was going on, but I was just concentrating in making that beanie or that scarf. So on the weekends, as I mentioned before, my family and I would always get together. So my family to join me, we all started loom knitting. And so we found that that was a form of art therapy that helped us not only get together, do something together, but focus in something other than what I was going through, but at the same time learning about lupus.
So, and you guys, I want to mention, it's not just you and your sister. How many sisters? And this is a big family you're talking about.
Yes. There is five sisters. I am the oldest of seven. There's two brothers and, of course, nephews and nieces, a brother-in-law, sister-in-law. And so we are a big family. We're a very big family. And we usually all get together.
That's a lot of beanies and scarves.
Yes. But I mean, we just give them away to whoever wanted them. And so that's how Looms for Lupus started.
And then how did you bring in other people? How did it grow to what did it start out as a support group where people were creating knitting and that, or how did tell us that story? Because
we're not all about knitting or loom knitting. We started just learning more about other forms of art therapy, mandala coloring, painting, painting rocks, doing different art therapies. So when we started, actually in 2010, that's when we started just bringing awareness to other people, and we started working with Kaiser Outreach Community Center, and they were providing us a room for us to provide support for others. And then, of course, one of the first places that where we found information and we connected was with Lupus LA. And so I have to say that Lupus LA has been so great. One of the organizations that I see and we see that is for patients. It's all focused for patients. So we had contact with Elise at the time, and that's when we started collaborating, and we started our support groups with Lupus LA.
Yeah, and we appreciate that, and we're so happy to have made this marriage, because you really are one of our more unique groups, and your following is so strong. And how did lupus patients find you when it first started?
We opened up a Facebook page, so we just started talking about it, and in our community, we would just go. My sister and I are very involved with different committees, and so we would just bring it up. We would talk about it. I have never been ashamed, or I have never been embarrassed to talk about my condition. From the beginning, I felt that talking about it was not only going to help me, but it was going to help others learn, understand, and, you know, just working together. And what we always say, that when we started Looms for Lupus, we started needing a community of hope for all of those patients, caregivers, loved ones who don't have the support. And we have seen it. We personally have seen it with many caregivers, family members who didn't know what lupus was. I'll give you an example. We had one lady that would come to our support group. She had been diagnosed with lupus now for 30 years. She never had support from her family. Her sister got sick with cancer, and all the focus was on her sister. And so as the support group, we asked her, well, why don't you invite your families? This support group is for family, for your family, and anyone that wants to join us. So after the parents and the sister went, when they left, they were so happy to learn more about their daughter's condition. And so now they're very close. They understand what she was going through and what she's still going through.
Lupus LA is excited to be hosting our second annual virtual dinner party experience with top chef Antonia LaFazzo on February 27th. Please visit lupusla.org for more information.
Yeah, I mean, it's really powerful, I think, when you can touch not only the patient, but when you can shed light on a patient's to a patient's family about what that patient's going through. And I think it's hard. Lupus patients are told all the time, you don't look sick. And I think being able to explain to family members, the realities of this illness, I think is a big part of what these support groups do. Now tell me, so you're also, you got hit pretty hard this year. You're a COVID survivor.
Yes.
And so I think you have a unique perspective because I know so many of us autoimmune patients are so worried about COVID. Tell us about your experience there.
Well, I used to say that if I had COVID or if I got COVID, that I was going to survive. I was very afraid. And so I tested positive. I don't know where I got it. I feel that I have to explain that I wasn't being neglectful and going out or not wearing a mask. I think that's important to say. But when I tested positive, the symptoms at the beginning weren't as bad as they are now. The symptoms were like having the flu, but then again, I wasn't sure if I had COVID because all the symptoms that I was having at the beginning before I got tested were as if I was having a lupus flare, body aches, headaches. I did not get a cough. I did not get fever. But I just felt like, okay, I'm going through a lupus flare. And days later, after I suspected that I had COVID, I got tested positive. So it did take a little longer for me to get better, but I survived it. But now, a month later, the symptoms continue. So I have been in contact with my doctor, and he said that the long hauler COVID effects, which now they're talking about more in the hospitals or the doctor's office, because it's happening where you are no longer contagious, you are no longer positive, yet you still have all those symptoms.
Yeah, and I would imagine for you, it's gotta be hard. What's triggered your lupus versus what's COVID versus, and how do you respond to both of those questions?
Right. What triggered my lupus back in 2009?
Yeah. No, I was just saying that that now going forward, trying to treat the long COVID is got to be a conflict from the physician's standpoint of how, what's your lupus, what's the COVID, what triggered what? I mean, I know there's a tremendous amount of research going on in the autoimmune rheumatology world about how COVID has been affecting rheumatology patients, but you're sort of, I would assume, a big experiment.
Right. At this point, and a month after I had COVID, my lupus symptoms have doubled. I have a lot more symptoms, but then doctors tell me it's COVID, still COVID symptoms. I just noticed that, or about a week ago, I started having a rash on my neck, on my face. And to me, it looks like a lupus rash. I don't know yet. I'm still waiting for a response from my doctor. But from the little that I know about lupus, I really feel that I am going through a flare right now. And I think that not only the stress of having COVID, all the stressors right now with COVID, not being able to go out or not being able to do a lot of the things, is also causing me not only the physical pains with lupus and COVID, but the mental part too as
mental
well.
Stress. Mental stress. So what health. Do you say? I know a big part of the support groups are managing stress and dealing with stress. So tell me, even for you, somebody who's a real advocate, how do you do that? What's your outlet these days? Is it still loom knitting? Is it other things? Is it, you know, how do you keep that stress at bay?
Self-care. You really have to, you know, take care of yourself. You have to do things that make you happy. For me, getting up, getting ready, as if I was going to work, even though I work from home and I do go out sometimes, just getting ready, having my routine, taking care of myself, still doing face masks, doing painting or coloring. And also what has helped me is that I continue my advocacy. I continue to bring awareness. I continue to just talk about everything that's going on and just sharing with people, not only my story, but also talking about the mental health well-being, that we need to do other things, focus on the positives. I mean, if we start focusing on what's going on and all the negatives, I think that will bring us even into a deeper hole mentally. So for me, I say that just focusing and just continuing what I do, which is the advocacy, bringing awareness, and self-care is what I do.
And tell me, when you talk to other patients and you talk to other family members, what is the one thing that they would love their doctors to understand? You know, what's that one thing that they come in and they say, I tried to tell my doctor this, but he or she didn't get it. And what is that thing?
One of the things that I always say to the patients that come to our support group, or anyone that, you know, that we're talking to about, you know, just being prepared. The doctor is a professional, and unfortunately they don't have hours and hours with us. I always tell them, be prepared, have your questions ready, and know that he is a doctor, but you are the one that knows your body. You need to be ready with your questions and what has been affecting you the most. And so just being ready and making sure that they're prepared, and know and understand that the doctor might not have all the answers, but I'm sure that they will get to the answers that they have, or give them the answers that they need, the patients.
And we talked a little bit before about your job and working with Child and Family Services. How do you think your diagnosis changed the way you look at your career or at your day-to-day job?
I have been a social worker way before I was diagnosed, and empathy, I think. But I don't know. I mean, that's a very hard question for me, because I always feel that my nature was always to help, to be there, to support. And I think that what I grew up learning and understanding from my parents is what I did as a social worker and as a patient advocate and as a patient who wants to help others. I feel that, I mean, it's similar. I don't think that it didn't change my way of thinking as far as helping, being there, and just trying my best to help.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I want to wrap it up, but I want to hear, you've been, I think, involved in the lupus community and the support group world and the patient world for the last 10 years. And there's been a tremendous amount of change, I would say, in the last 10 years versus the 10 years before that. What do you think has been the most exciting development in the lupus world over those last 10 years? So, you know, what was sort of back then not so great and now is really inspiring you?
That there's more awareness, not only from the bigger organizations, but also there's a lot more advocacy, a lot more awareness, and a lot more resources. I do have to say and bring it back and say that from my experience, I have never seen another organization like Lupus LA that has helped or is helping our patients with grants, with the resources, with the meetings, with the conferences. And I think that is really needed. That is great for our communities.
I agree with that for sure. Yes. So I guess we should end on a really, what would you, give me the thing you would tell a newly diagnosed lupus patient today that would, I think, give them that bit of hope that, you know what, they're going to be okay.
Yes. What I would tell a newly diagnosed patient is not to lose hope, that they're not alone, to search and look for help and support, not only from their families, loved ones, but from other patients who have already walked what they're walking on right now. So definitely I would let them know that they're not alone, that there's help and there's support in our community.
Excellent. Well, Juana, I couldn't be more appreciative of you being our first guest here on the Your Story, Our Fight, Lupus LA podcast. Thank you so much for your advocacy, your work, your voice. It is so important to me, to Lupus LA, to the greater lupus community. And we hope you feel better soon.
Thank you.
And we hope this is the start of a really great tradition of these podcasts. And thanks so much for being our very first guest.
Thank you so much, Adam. And thank you to Lupus LA for all the help that our community gets and the support and the resources.
On behalf of the entire team at Lupus LA, we thank you for joining the Your Story, Our Fight podcast. Please tune in, spread the word, and come back for more inspiring lupus stories. I'm your host, Adam Selkowitz, wishing you good health, and to always remember, your story is our fight.